Hey, everyone, and welcome back to That Plumbing Podcast. My name is Brandon. I'm joined here with Mac again today, and you get to see us both for the first time. This is kind of weird, huh?
It sure is.
Yeah. We're professional now. We got the microphones and the headsets and all that. So,
how
have you been? It's been a while, but you seem to be like the reoccurring guest recently.
Yes, sir. Man, yeah, it has been a while. Just been super busy at work. So, busy time.
Yeah. It was really busy for a bit. It does seem like it is starting to slow down some. Is not for you though, right?
No, lately, no. Just a ton of big emergency jobs that keep coming in that, you know, working long hours, but pays the bills. So,
you know, if you're in Arizona, especially in the Phoenix area, it does start to slow down in the summertime for a little bit. I guess it's something to do with maybe the snowbirds leaving, but I mean, it's still a huge city, but we do, and I have seen in the past multiple, you know, slowdowns in that period. So you're lucky. I mean, you're still going strong, right?
Yeah, no, staying busy, that's for sure. Yeah, maybe a little too much work too, but
a little too much. You know, yeah,
can't complain.
But you were telling me you've been doing pretty well, right? As far as like your numbers and all that.
Yeah, no, I had a killer year last year. It just gives me more motivation to keep going this year and try to make it even better each year. At least from what I've experienced, your income and sales should be going up if you're doing the right thing. So that's what I've been seeing.
Yeah, definitely. What's is there anything new, any like recent developments or like techniques or like a job recently that kind of stuck out to you?
You know, yes. So we have this commercial account and they have probably 5 different locations. And I swear all of their water heaters are going out at once. So I've probably replaced 300 gallon water heaters this month alone.
Wow.
And they always start leaking at like 1 or 2 o'clock. So we have to drop what we're doing and get out there and get it done. So that's been keeping me really busy.
That's good. So it's like a new commercial account that's kind of adding to this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Cause it's always frustrating. Like when I've been in Phoenix 6 years. When I first moved here, I worked for a company that did HVAC and plumbing. So I didn't even realize that it got slow in the summer for plumbing because I could fall back and do maintenances on HVAC. But the past few years, yeah, I did.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Cool.
This company's just, it's just plumbing. So,
gotcha.
But like, I don't know, the past 2 summers, it kind of snuck up on me. And coincidentally, that's when I like left jobs as well because it like slowed down. So I wasn't prepared. I had to find someplace else. So I would go to a different place.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it always seemed to work out. It has worked out.
Yeah, no, for sure.
All right. Well, for today, we're going to talk about, I think in light of it getting slower, especially since the metrics say that most of our listeners are from the Arizona, Phoenix, Tucson area. I think we're just going to talk a little bit about how to maximize calls when the time is slow. I know that your company offers maintenance plans, and while mine does not, I've worked for companies that have. And I think that that's one of the key ways to get yourself in the door and explore opportunities is through those maintenance plans. Would you agree?
Definitely, yeah. And I mean, some would argue there's not a lot of maintenance to do other than, you know, flushing a heater, visual inspections, testing the hardness. But it definitely leads into, you know, there's in any house you go into, there should be something that needs to be repaired, at least in my opinion, unless it's a brand new house. But yeah, no, doing those maintenances kind of just gets you in the door. You don't have to, you know, pressure sell them into anything. But if you see something wrong, I mean, might as well recommend it. And you're already there. 9 times out of 10, they're just going to want you to do it while you're there. So it's super easy to create work for yourself when it's slow.
And I get what you're saying. Like it's not like HVAC where it's pretty crucial that you get your unit checked out, coils clean, refrigerant checked every 6 months, especially here in Phoenix before summer. Plumbing is more like, I mean, you have your water heater flushes or tankless descales.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, that's kind of it, right? I mean, as far as like maintenance is.
Yeah. I mean, RO filters, but it's not, everything's kind of yearly and it's not necessarily essential for the average consumer.
The way I see it is that, yes, the water heater flush that gets you in the door, but this is the opportunity to really slow down and start to just get to know the customer a little bit better, especially if you've never been there before or they haven't used you a bunch in the past, your company. Maybe your company's not really into the relationship building process yet. And while this customer may have been a customer for years, if you're never had the philosophy of really getting to know them and building the relationship, I mean, this could basically be like your first encounter with them.
Yeah. The one thing my company does really well, or the company I work for, I should say, is if we've been out to a specific customer's house, they'll do everything they can to try to get us back there whenever there's another call. So say, you know, they'll move the schedule around if I've been there before, just so it's a face they've seen before. And especially if, you know, they were happy with the work you did the first time. That makes, you know, going into there a lot easier because they know who you are. They trust you for the most part. And you have other stuff to talk about from the previous visit. So that helps a lot.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of trying to stick with the same customer, like a doctor. Again, great example. You build that relationship with that doctor. So it's, you know, it's good to go back. But I understand smaller companies like my company, it's not always possible.
Yeah, for sure.
For that. But yeah, if you've already got that establishment, you already know the history, you already got that rapport. I mean, I think that that's definitely ideal.
Yeah.
I mean, like, so your maintenance is that gives you, you got your water heaters and whatnot, water quality tests as well. I mean, if they don't have a softener or any type of filtration, great time to kind of ease into that conversation with them.
Yeah, especially in Arizona. I mean, in my opinion, a softener is essential. It really is because it'll make your whole house last a lot longer. So if they don't have a softener, I'll do a water hardness test just to kind of show them how bad the water quality is. And I'll explain, you know, 16 grains of hardness is bad, really bad. That kind of gets them thinking. They'll do their research on their own. But I mean, softeners, if you don't have one in Arizona, you really need one. It's good for your skin. It's good for everything.
So those that don't know, that mean Phoenix, Arizona has very hard water. It's got a lot of minerals and calcium in the water, which sticks inside the fixtures, creates like a white haze, like a buildup. And then Phoenix uses a lot of reclaimed water because we're in the middle of the desert. So there's a lot of chlorine and chloramines and stuff to treat basically wastewater and ship it back to your house. So, you know, if you're not filtering it, then you're basically just getting the bare minimum that is required by the city to make it clean enough to use and drink.
Which usually isn't enough. It's not a very high standard. So.
Yeah. I mean, I've tasted, I do the best I can to not drink the water, even, you know, in spite of everything out here. So aside from that, aside from just like going in and memorizing like objection handling techniques and whatnot, I wanted to get your opinion on like, what are some things that technicians can do to better themselves aside from like going all the way to the sales side and memorizing 100 different objection handling techniques and whatnot? Like, what are some things that maybe you do to help yourself may not necessarily be like sales related?
I guess I kind of think of the customer as maybe like a cousin, like a family member. Cause in that scenario, you're not trying to sell them on anything, but you also want to make them aware of, you know, what you see. I mean, I'm sure you've gone into houses where it's an older gentleman or older lady and their grandson or their son has dabbled in plumbing, and they always check in with them to make sure we're doing our job right. It's kind of like that. You're just kind of, you kind of have their back, make sure if another plumber comes in behind me, there's nothing that they can point out that I didn't already to the customer. That's actually a really big thing I was taught, is think about, think that another plumber is going to be coming in right behind you and inspecting your work and going through the whole house to see if there's anything you didn't point out to the customer. That kind of just almost guilts me into got to do the full thing and not trying to sell them. Just make sure you've made them aware of everything else so that another plumber can't kind of make you look dumb.
I know what you're saying. It's thinking of them as like a family member or someone that you actually care about. And you wouldn't act like hopefully you wouldn't act like some kind of car salesman to your family member. You know, you would want to figure out what it is, what is their problems, really drill down into what their needs are and their concerns are, and then like educate them and give them options.
Yeah. And that's all you can do. And if they don't, if they don't want to take your advice, that's on them. All you can do is kind of make them aware and go from there. They called you there for a reason. So they obviously should value your opinion. I mean, I'm sure you've came across so many people that are like, I could have done it. I just don't have time, or, you know, I'm too busy. But you're not too busy. You called us for a reason. So we're going to give you all the information we have, and then you can do with it what you will. But just making sure you leave every call feeling good about it and knowing that you did everything you kind of could. So,
yeah, I mean, especially in the slow season where it's not uncommon to get maybe one call a day when it's slow, too.
Yeah.
There's no need to rush through it because you have more calls. Like, it is crucial that you slow down and explore opportunities. Just last week, I came across a customer who was, it was a toilet problem. She had one that was running, wouldn't flush properly. Big house here in Scottsdale. And I arrived on site. I started talking to her. Really, I slowed down and I made sure she was one of the ones, it's actually a good thing. She was one of the kind of people that wanted to walk with me through the house. Mm-hmm. And so I let her take the lead. I let her set the pace, but I was fully engaged with her. And she was pulling out, we go to one bathroom. She talks about the toilet. I'll ask her questions like, well, how does this flush for you? Is it too low for you? Do you like the way it looks? Really just like listening to her concerns as much as I can, let her talk, let her get everything out. We mm-hmm. went to each bathroom in each room and kind of repeated the process for the toilets, asking the questions, how she liked it, how old it is, just going through every one of them. In the end, I gave her options for a good, better, best toilet replacement. And she went with the premium toilets, 5 of them for all the bathrooms. Ooh. Across the board. American Standard Champion Pro. She's like, let's just go ahead and do it. She was talking to her husband and he was like, well, what do you think? And she was like, well, I think we should just do it. And she was like, okay, we'll take the premium ones.
Oh, that's awesome. I was like, oh, that was a good day, I'm sure.
And they top it off after asking her, what about your water heater? When's the last time it was flush? Have you ever had problems with it? Not trying to sell her, not trying to, you know, some of these guys and some of these techniques, it's like, the technique is to get them to get you to the water heater so that you can start like trying to sell them and scare them and mm-hmm. upsell them and all that. I literally just wanted to see him because that's what it is. The call was to check everything in the house. So I guess that was kind of going to come up anyway. But in the end, she ended up replacing a water heater as well.
That's awesome.
And a garbage disposal, which was it was the mid-grade garbage disposal and some little odd end things. It ended up being a very good ticket. I had brought in one of the other technicians to come in and help me knock it out in a day. So
did you do it that day or did you schedule it out?
We had to schedule it because it was like midday and
figured. Yeah.
It's hard.
Brand new salesman. That's awesome. That's an awesome job. That's such a good feeling when you're not selling them, but they know, you know, they make that decision, which you think is right. Mm-hmm. Then you do the work and they're happy with their choice. They know what they're getting into and all that stuff. So that's awesome.
Yep. No surprises there. And she was really cool to work with. We had to wait a couple of days because we had to order 5 toilets and
5 Champion Pros. That's awesome.
That was a big one. But that, I mean, that's just, if you're going to try and rush through jobs, like you're not going to get, you can rush through the job and then present them all these options. But if they don't trust you, they're not going to pick that premium solution and spend mm-hmm. that much money with you. You know, I demonstrated to her that I actually cared by listening and wasn't just trying to sell her. I wanted to figure out which her needs were and find the best solutions for her.
Yeah. And just real quick, from my knowledge, what led you to recommending a toilet replacement?
Well, she had multiple toilets. I mean, they were all original. Mm-hmm. So probably the house was over 20 years old to begin with. And I think, you know, she had done some repairs in the past. You know, other plumbers have come in, she's had problems, they made repairs, moved on. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with making the repair.
Yeah.
But if it's an old toilet, I mean, if it's over, I don't know, 15 years, 15, 20 years, I don't know if there's really like a limit, but you shouldn't just limit them to a repair. Especially if they're older toilets.
Gotcha. So you probably told them, yeah, I can make a repair, or we can nip this in the butt and get you a new toilet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can make this repair. I mean, there's no warranty. The toilet's old. And then the number one thing is to ask them, how does it flush for you? Because if it develops a weak flush, you can replace everything on the toilet, but it's still going to have a weak
flush. Not going to do a darn thing. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Toilets are tricky because water heaters, 7 to 11 years, I think is, you know, what they say. So if it's over 7 years, any repairs, like you said, no warranty on it, but you really should think about replacing it. But toilets, I've never really had a number on it. When is a good time? Mm-hmm. So yeah, 15 years. I mean, that sounds good. Like that's a good lifespan for a toilet. So
yeah. I mean, I think also if you look inside the toilet and see that it's really messed up, the flapper's starting to wrinkle and there's rust on the bolts and there's sediment and it's got the old ball cock style. Like if you can see there's been a lot of repairs on it and now there's another repair that there's something else wrong with it. Well, I think it's your obligation to give them the option to
absolutely and a good, better, best too, which is awesome.
It's a good time to brush up on your skills, you know, in service and sales in this slow time. It's good opportunities for everyone. Mm-hmm. Another thing I think I would recommend to make yourself a better technician is to really take the time to focus on yourself. In that, are you eating properly? Are you drinking water? Are you working out? Are you doing things that make you as a person, as a human, better and more positive and optimistic? Because if you can do that, then that energy, that natural positivity bleeds into your work life and benefits you when you're talking to customers. I mean, they can pick up on the energy if you're a naturally happy person, if you're actually happy to be there versus someone who's there just to get in and out. You know?
Oh yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I'm a big gym guy.
Oh.
And eating well, you know. But not only, you know, physically, yeah, you look better, you feel better, but mentally, the mental stimulation I get from it is, you know, that I would do it just for that reason. I'm sharper, you know, I'm in a way better mood because I just went through something really hard. So everything else after that's gonna be pretty darn easy compared to what I went through. Just the mental aspect, it just changes your whole day. So couldn't agree more.
I think that's the idea, is you wake up and instead of trying to avoid the hardness of life or avoid difficult tasks, like you make yourself do it first thing. Like you said, by working out is probably the best example.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then the rest of the day is easy because you woke up and tackled the hardest thing you could think of first.
And you feel good. You got the day rolling, you know, started off right, you know. You're on a roll, starting the day off on a roll. So you just kind of want to keep going. I love it. It's changed my life for sure.
And it doesn't even have to be, I mean, do you have a gym membership or how do you do it?
I have a gym membership, but anything active, in my opinion, just getting your heart rate up a little bit. I'm not a scientist. I know there's a lot of studies saying how it helps your brain function and all that stuff, helps your mood and all that, releases dopamine. Even going on a walk, like that's better than nothing. If you get up, roll out of bed, throw your clothes on, you know, you're yawning on your way to your first job. That's not going to go nearly as good as if you get up, just move a little bit, do anything, just, you know, walk around your neighborhood or something. You'll feel way better for the rest of the day.
Absolutely. Like you said, that's just walking. You know, if you don't have a gym membership or you're, you know, not very active, starting small.
Yeah, just anything, honestly.
You could even, I mean, meditation is a great thing. Just 5 minutes, 10 minutes, just you don't have to do anything. You just sit there, which is ironically one of the hardest things to do.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Just sit there. But, and you talk about dopamine and whatnot. I was just to say part of the reasons why I haven't posted in so long is that I struggle with procrastination a lot. And I've suspected for a long time that I might have ADHD, and I finally did go and see a doctor and talk about stuff. And I mean, it wasn't a very thorough test, but based on what they asked me and my responses, I do have it on some level. And dopamine is a big part of that. And you don't need to be ADHD to suffer from like dopamine withdrawal, especially if you're the type of person, which I was, and still am. I'm not, you know, waking up and going straight to your phone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. No, I'm the same exact way. I kind of always have to be stimulated with something. My brain always has to, you know, be locked in on something. And I go through that too, where I'll be good posting my videos on social media, you know, 3 a week, 4 a week, and then I won't post for a week or two. And it's just because my mind's on something totally different. Like recently, funny enough, I've gotten into golf. I've never golfed in my life. Gotten to golf. I was obsessed with it. And then 2 weeks go by and I'm like, oh crap, I have this whole social media thing going on. I'm just letting it go to waste. Yeah, no, I totally understand. It's so hard to keep up with everything going on when your brain just wants instant gratification with whatever you do. So you kind of do whatever's going to give you that feeling you need. But, yeah.
I kind of went on a deep dive on the ADHD thing because, you know, I've had, I guess you could say, addiction issues in the past. I've indulged in alcohol a little much in my years. And so I was very concerned about taking something like ADHD medication, which can be amphetamines. I didn't want to get addicted to it or, you know, go down that path. So I went really deep in on like the dopamine and how it affects the brain. And from what I gathered, like, sleep is the number one thing you can do to make you like ready and energized for the day.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, it replenishes the dopamine levels in your brain. And so if you wake up and you automatically start going into something like TikTok or YouTube or social media, that you get a lot of dopamine from those activities, and it actually drains your potential dopamine levels throughout the day. And then you don't get that replenished until you go back to sleep. And then if you're not getting enough sleep, then you're not getting the appropriate levels, and it's just like a spiral. You just get trapped in it.
Absolutely. I mean, TikTok and Instagram Reels are so dangerous. I mean, I found myself, it's embarrassing. I found myself with my mouth open, gamer neck is what people call it, hunched over like that. Mm-hmm. You got your mouth open and drool starts coming out. You're like, what am I doing? I'm wasting my life watching these Reels and TikToks, but they're so addictive. You're just waiting to find something better every time you swipe. Yeah, I definitely need to be better about that, but those are time wasters for sure.
What about your social media stuff? How have you been doing with the posting?
I've been doing better. Oddly enough, so when I first started, I was posting almost every day, which in my mind, I thought that was good, you know, just get as much content out there as I possibly can, which, you know, is still good. But not even on purpose, I started posting maybe once or twice a week, more like once a week, spending a little bit more time on the editing and stuff. Maybe I make a job last an hour or two longer to get good shots and stuff. And those do way better than when I'm just kind of slapping it together, throwing it out there, which I didn't mean to. It's because I was kind of preoccupied with other stuff, so I was only able to get one thing out. But those have been doing really good, so I might switch over to that, like bank a ton of them. And then if I'm on vacation or something, or if I just don't have a good job that's, you know, going to be aesthetically pleasing on the internet, I can just have those bankrolled and release one or two a week. It seems like that's doing really well. So,
yeah, it makes sense. And you probably, you know, you get burned out doing one every day. And
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have a kid too. So I get home, especially because it's been so busy, I'll get home 4 or 5, have a couple hours with my son, my wife, and then he goes to bed around 8. So there's the day. And then I need to, you know, get to sleep. Because like you said, I've really been prioritizing sleep. I'll try to get 8 or 9 hours a day. I don't do it every day because it's not realistic, but I try to. So the day just goes by so fast.
You realize how much, when you're trying to, it seemed like I had so much time to be on TikTok and YouTube. Like I was complaining I was on it too much. But it's like when I want to take that time and actually be responsible with it, and plan it and use it for productive things, it doesn't seem like there's enough between work and everything.
Yeah. You just pull your phone out and you're right there on it going at it. It's just too convenient almost. It's a trap for sure.
The phone thing is really, I really been thinking about this, like how it's it's probably one of the biggest causes for society, well, the way that the world is, or society is, Americans, how we're just distracted all the time. And meanwhile, the world is like starting to burn and we're just like on our phones, you know, still swiping away, pretending like nothing happened. Nothing's
just
happening.
Getting dumber and dumber by the day, watching, you know, stuff that isn't gonna, not that everything you do has to be contributing to something bigger, but a lot of that, I mean, hours a day, I'll get my notification for my screen time and what apps I was on. And at the end of the week, I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to do something about this. This is embarrassing. 8 hours a day or something I was seeing. Yeah. Now I do use it for work and stuff like that. Safari, searching stuff up, parts and stuff, but still 8 hours a day is crazy. And actually, to touch on that, I saw this study. Again, I'm not a scientist. I don't know what I'm talking about, but I saw the study. The average teenager spends 8 hours a day just on social media, not Safari or anything like that, just on, you know, Instagram and TikTok, 8 hours a day. I don't even know how they come up with that time, to be honest with you, with school and stuff. But yeah, I read that and I'm like, wow, that is, and that's on average. Who knows what the high end of that is. Just crazy.
It does feel like people are becoming more aware, or at least the message of it, of social media and smartphone usage is starting to change to see how bad it is for us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's ironic, though, because while, you know, smartphone using social media all day is like terrible for you, at the same time, this device is like the answer in a way to everything. I mean, we're connected to each other. We have the information of anything we can think of, like at our hands. It's like, it's the most amazing piece of technology ever. At the same time, it's the worst thing for us.
Absolutely. Yeah. You just have to know how to use it smartly. I mean, I was talking to my dad a couple of weeks ago and he was talking about when he first started service plumbing, he would have to call into the dispatcher, write down an address that they're telling him, and then punch it into his Garmin or whatever, or just follow side streets to get there. And now you just, you have Service Titan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Service Titan. You just click, take me there and it takes you right there. So stuff like that. I mean, it's great, but then yeah, you just have to balance out the good and the bad with it. It's the best thing in the world, but all, at the same time, you can waste your life on,
or at least you're creating. I mean, I think that's one of the direct answers is instead of consuming something, create something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At least, especially if you can be educational, like plumbers that might be listening to this, you know, making educational videos, because like my company recently purchased like a training software for apprentices.
Yes.
And I was looking through it and I mean, it's not worthless, but all of the material is based in a perfect world situation.
Yeah. No, and that's most plumbing schools out here too. I mean, you're in an air conditioned place, you know, they're teaching you. It's basically like new install stuff, which I'm, you know, everything in plumbing is going to be different every single time. There's no, you can change a water heater out and it's going to be different every time what you have to do. I didn't do any schooling or anything. I mean, I know someone who did do, it was like an 8 week, 10 week course or something. We thought he'd be good to go and not even close. Like you know, the lingo kind of, you know, water heaters, softeners, the basic stuff, but you don't know how to diagnose stuff. You don't know how to talk to customers. In my opinion, the hardest part of plumbing is the diagnostic and relaying that to the customer in a way they can understand it.
Diagnosing and communication. I mean, the program has zero customer service skills in it. And like, that's basically useless to a service plumber.
The same guy I was talking about that did the 6 or 8 week course or whatever. He thought he was ready to go. He paid money to do the course and it really didn't help him at all. It just kind of wasted 6 to 8 weeks of his life. And that's the tough part about plumbing. Maybe I'm biased because I am a plumber, but I feel like that it's the hardest trade to learn because everyone dabbles in plumbing, according to them at least, and they'll do stuff way wrong. And then you kind of have to backpedal and figure out what they did. And it could be anything. I mean, there's so many different aspects to plumbing.
Yeah. And like I said, the communication, preparing the customer for what could happen, managing their expectations, I think, if I could say it, managing the customer's expectations is so crucial.
Yeah.
And then like, just back to like, let's just say a faucet, let's replace a faucet. All right. It's fine in a perfect world, but what if you get under there and there's no room, it's rusted. Everything is just corroded to hell. You know, you can't just start hacking it. You can't damage their countertop. And I mean, it might sound simple. Well, just cut it out. But when you got the Sawzall in your hand or the grinder and you're looking at it and you cannot damage their counter. I mean, if you scrape their granite countertop, then now you're on the hook for it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've seen guys like, it sounds like it, but when it's actually in your hand and the pressure and responsibility is on you, they can freeze.
Absolutely. Yeah. People will be shocked at the price, even for a customer supplied faucet. And it's, you never know what you're going to run into. Angle stop busts. What then? You know, a homeowner's not going to really know what to do there. Mm-hmm. And to touch on that, I actually have a story probably 1 year into plumbing. I went out to install a customer supplied faucet for this lady. She was not friendly at all or anything like that. She did not want me there for whatever reason. It was customer supplied. So she went and picked it up, and it's definitely my fault. And I learned a ton from it. Like you were saying, it was rusted out completely. There was no way I was going to be able to unthread it from the bottom or anything. So sure enough, I take a hacksaw to it and cut it off. It's working fine. And then I go to put the new faucet in. And it's one of those countertops where the backsplash is pretty close to the back of the faucet. So what I found, I was trying to put it in and the handle, it kind of curves back. It wouldn't push down because of that backsplash. Mm. And she was furious at me. I thought I was going to get fired. But so like stuff like that, like now I know to look for all that stuff before I get hacking away. And that kind of also goes into learning on the job. Anyone that went to a plumbing school would probably have done exactly what I did, hacked it out and try to put it in. And what now? What do I do now? So yeah, I mean, that's just a story I have about where something so simple can go sideways so quick.
Look at being able to look ahead and see those little things like, this isn't going to fit. Now, this was customer supplied?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I get it, but she supplied it.
I had a little play on it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, ma'am, I'm sorry. You supplied this. I can only install what you bought. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, that was a bad day.
Yeah. And then like you said, you got to do the work while handling this mad customer. You know, mm-hmm. they start yelling at you or giving you attitude. You know, you get anxious, your heart rate starts going up. You're like, who are you to talk to me? But you got to keep that down. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like a lot of emotions to deal with when the customer is unhappy.
Yeah, and there's a fine line too. I mean, if a customer is being completely disrespectful and doesn't care for my time or knowledge, I'm not going to stay there and take it just to make the sale, to be perfectly honest. Like, there's other jobs I can go do. I'm not going to sit here and be demeaned the whole time, talking about how the prices are way too high and how I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, I get it a lot where they don't trust me because I look younger. Mm. I mean, just last week I had this older lady. She was nice at the end because I kind of made her look dumb, not on purpose. But first thing she says is, you look way too young to be a plumber. Mm. You're going to have to prove that you know what you're talking about. Like, I don't know if I trust this situation. So I'm like, all right, I mean, I'm happy to try to get another plumber out. It's not going to be today. Or you can, tell me what's going on and I can fix it for you. But I mean, I was really close to just saying, you know what, we'll send another plumber. Don't even worry about it. So you have to value yourself too. You know what you're doing. You know what you're talking about. And if they're not going to appreciate that and it's not repairable, I guess, I have no problem leaving a house saying, I'm sorry. I'm not going to sit here and battle through this for however much money. It's not worth it.
It is expensive, especially to people who maybe have never dealt with it before. And, I've had customers kind of do the same thing. Like, I just don't understand. How is it that much? Wait, so you're telling me the part is this much, and so you're charging this much per hour? Mm-hmm. And it's just, I get it because like, I didn't understand what it takes to run a business when I first started. And a lot of people just, they don't know that they think the plumber's getting most of that and they're just getting ripped off. Or they just, they don't know that, hey, that's what plumbing costs. And like you said, if they start, you know, making me feel like I'm not worth it, or if they try talking me down or getting me to match something else, like I'll walk away.
Absolutely.
And not put myself, because what happens is you put yourself in a position where you cut the price so much just to get the business, and then you're rushing to get the job done because you know, you don't have enough time to do it properly. And then of course, those are the customers that are going to nitpick you apart, your job. You end up going back for some reason. It's just way better to, you know, hey, I've told customers, I don't think we're a good match. That's no problem. You can definitely try a handyman or another company.
Yeah. And luckily, you know, the owner of the company I work for, he's a great guy. And he's told us flat out, hey, if you have a bad feeling going into a job where, you know, payment might be an issue, or they might, we're going to be liable for something that isn't a big issue, but they're going to make it a big issue, feel free to walk away. Cause it's not worth it. I mean, we've had customers, I ran a new main line from the meter to the main water shutoff at the house. Happy as could be, very nice people. And then come to find out a week later, they had canceled their credit card that we charged. It's, you just never know. Some people are just so slimy. It's unbelievable. If you have a bad feeling, walk out. I mean, there's enough plumbing to be done. It's not worth the liability in the future.
Yeah. Did they end up paying you, your company take care of you for it, or you had to eat that cost?
Luckily I work for a great company. If there's anything like that, they're going to make sure we're taken care of, and they'll just kind of eat it.
Good. Yeah. I mean, that kind of what you said there, you thinking about, like, I know what my time's worth. There's other jobs out there that I can do if we're not a match. And I think some companies, especially here in Phoenix, and of course we won't say the companies that really charge a lot, the type of companies with 60 plus techs, and you know, they only on busy season get maybe one or two calls, and that's what they have to maximize that call. They have got to get it. They have got to upsell. They have got to get in there and like hard sell people. And I mean, it still amazes me that they're still in business, but I mean, the way I was thinking about it is, so you have your prices. Now they could be maxed out, you know, as much as you can possibly get, overcharging, and you don't sell a lot. You might sell every three, like just throw a number out there, every three. And that huge sale that you do finally get kind of makes up for the last ones that you lost because they were too expensive.
Yeah.
Well, I'm more of a favor is like, let's charge a reasonable price. Still what I'm getting, that it's worth my time, but then I get more sold. And then when I go to a customer and I say, hey, it's okay, I don't need your business, then that's true because I sell enough on every other call, every other day, day after day, where I don't need to adjust my prices.
Yeah. And to touch on that, I mean, I'm sure we both know the big company we're talking about, or the big few we're talking about. They'll call you into the office if your sales percentage isn't high enough for that month. They'll say, hey, you need to get this above this specific percentage for sales or you're done. So they kind of leave them no choice to, you know, sell stuff that the customer doesn't necessarily need, or else they're fired. It can be a slimy business.
Yeah. And I noticed that, a lot of these, investment companies, these, private equity companies are starting to buy up a lot of HVAC and plumbing and these trades, especially in Phoenix, because there's just so much out here. The company I used to work for, they were bought out by a private equity company. And I mean, I don't know. I'm assuming, because I haven't worked for one of those companies, but I would think that once you're working for private equity investors, that's when it becomes bottom line, sell, sell, sell. You don't care about the customer. We just need you to hard sell this $20,000 water softener combination package. And I'm grateful that I'm not a part of company. I'm actually still part of a smaller mom and pop company who they really do care. They're really good people. And it allows me to be who I am and go in there and really care about the customer as much as I can, give them options. I don't have to hard sell them. If they need time to think, okay, that's fine. I'm still here. And I've had customers call me back in a week or two and be like, okay, now we're going to go with it. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's overall the best customer experience you can give.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, I can't remember when I found out, but like you were saying, all these bigger plumbing companies, they're owned by the same person. They, you know, they aren't going to combine them all, but they're all run. They all have the same, you know, incentives to sell. They have to sell. Or, like you said, you know, people's money are tied up in it. So they have no choice to sell. And I work for, it's a family owned business. It's a little bigger. I mean, I think we have 6 or 7 plumbers, so that's still pretty small, but, yeah, you have a lot more freedom. You're not like a prisoner to sell, even if you don't need to. But on the flip side, there's always going to be stuff to sell. Every house I've been into, I don't know if I've ever walked into a house where there wasn't an angle stop that just looked horrible, or, you know, a ball valve that was corroded and dripping a little bit, but the customer didn't notice. It's good to work for a smaller company, and it's good to, in my opinion, use a smaller company, because they have way more incentive to do you right. Like these bigger companies, they'll send a tech out there that doesn't really know a lot. They'll do a half-assed job. They'll have a callback, and the company will just reimburse them for some of the money and move on to the next. They don't, at least from my experience, they don't really care about doing a good, solid job for you. They just care about, you know, getting a check and moving on to the next. They don't care about repeat customers or anything like that.
No, just get them. Get as much as you can while you're there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you don't sell something, it's always like your fault.
Mm-hmm.
It's always like, well, did you do this? Did you do that? What did you say? It's like, okay, it felt wrong as a human to push further.
Yeah.
So now I have to compromise my moral integrity to make a paycheck.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because you are overcharging. You are charging $600-$700 per hour. It's just, you know, so I guess what I'm trying to say is, if you're looking at your company, maybe you're an apprentice looking to get hired with a company, or you're looking to start with a company that might train you, are they private equity? You know, if so, chances are it's going to be very salesy, and it's going to be sink or swim. And not saying all the time, but I'm just saying that seems like the trend, as opposed to like a smaller company.
Yeah, no, couldn't agree more.
All right, so we're getting close to the end, but I did want to go ahead and try something different, and just let's hear about some of your worst experiences from your customers. Like, what was a job that just went to hell and it was terrible, and you still remember it? And how did you handle it? How did it turn out for you?
Man, there's so many. A recent one, I guess, that is very memorable is, it was a commercial building, really old. It was in like downtown Scottsdale. Super old piping, all galvanized water lines. What were we doing there? We were replacing probably a 20-foot section of 1-inch galvanized that was just corroded out completely, all on the exterior of the building. So we shut the water off, cut into it, and then the galvanized piping that stubbed into the unit broke off. Of course. So I'm trying to get in there, and the shops didn't open till like 10 or something, and it was 8. So I'm freaking out, hoping water's not leaking in there. Finally, we get in there. The tenant is pissed. They, you know, they have a business to run, yada, 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 all that stuff. Property manager's pissed. But I'm sure, you know, I mean, galvanized is going to break all the time. It's kind of just how it is. So we replaced the section we were there for. We get inside, we're trying to find where the pipe is. Sure enough, it's buried in the cinder block wall. So we have to bust out the wall. Still can't find where it's going to. And we find out it's stubbed right behind back-to-back toilets. So we have to pull both toilets, cut into the wall, run probably 10 feet of copper through wall, through cinder block, all that stuff. Everyone's pissed at me because I messed up. But in the end, it worked out. Obviously, we didn't charge them for it. because it was my fault. It broke off in my hands. That was a horrible one, mostly just because the tenants were pissed. They were furious at me.
Wait, so you the galvanized broke in your hands, and so they blamed you for it?
They blamed me because they don't know any different, you know.
Okay.
They don't understand it's horrible piping and stuff like that. It stubbed right into there. And I was threading on a dielectric union onto the end of a galvanized nipple. Wasn't over tightening it or anything. I had really just started the threads and put a wrench on it, and then it just totally breaks off in the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Those types of jobs. It should have been an easy job, really quick, all on the outside, you know, a dream job, I guess. Quoted really well, would have made good money. Ended up losing money because of all the extra work we had to do. But it's mostly when the tenants and the property managers are upset with you, purely just because they don't understand how crappy the pipe is, even though the quote says, you know, any other damaged piping or anything outside of scope of work will be additional. They're still pissed. So the pressure's like on your shoulders at that point. That was not a good day in plumbing, but.
So in spite of that, you didn't charge them extra. Like, they were just so confrontational that you were just
I couldn't charge them. Obviously afterwards, I don't know what happened behind the scenes, but, I'm pretty sure we didn't charge them extra because it was a pretty big account. You know, we want to do them right. Mm. It's not really anyone's fault, even though, in my opinion, our quote did say if anything else breaks, going to be additional. They didn't care about that. I'm sure you've had situations like that where accidents happen and there's nothing you can really do about it. Your hands were on it. That's all they know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You touch it. Yeah. I mean, that galvanized, man, anytime I see galvanized, I dread it. But
one of my videos too, actually, I was replacing a backflow with copper, you know, and it's a brass meet or backflow I was installing. And so many of the comments were, why don't you use galvanized? Like, no one's going to steal galvanized. And I'm like, you're obviously not a plumber, first of all. Second of all, they'll steal galvanized. They're there for the backflow. They don't really care about the copper too much. So just how those people commenting that don't understand it, neither do the property managers. They don't get it.
Mm.
Can be frustrating.
Yeah, as someone who don't know or someone from the East Coast or something, I mean, I would not use galvanized on anything. I don't
anything. Yeah,
but that's a good example of like how preparing and managing the customer's expectations, which it sounds like you did. You said this could break, and if so, I'm not responsible.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
I get it. They're a big account. You don't want to get them upset.
Yeah, for sure.
But if it was just a residential, I'd be like, nah, it's in here. It's in here.
Not a big deal. Exactly. Yeah.
That's funny because mine, I have one that's similar in that it was for a company I used to work for. I was on call that week and I get a call. It was late. It was like 8 o'clock at night. Go out to an apartment. They have a leak. I forget. They might probably had a leak in the yard or something in the front. And it's like a complex, very low income, like slums. Basically,
mm-hmm.
Water's leaking. I shut it off at the meter and I start digging down. So you have the house and then you have a property line. Let's just say you're looking at the property. To the right, there's a concrete wall that separates that property from the one next to it. Mm-hmm. Turns out the piping was, I think, 2-inch galvanized directly below the wall. They poured concrete on top of the pipe. To like, because they were drunk or something. I don't know. So I dig down and I see it and I see the hole and then it's like the concrete's on there. And so I don't have a jackhammer. So I have to go get one. I start to try and do it that night, but it's dark. I don't have any lights. It's really just the worst situation possible. I was able to talk to the property manager and say, hey, look, I'm just not prepared to do it tonight. Spy houses are closed. I'll be back first thing in the morning. I think I would lucked out. It's good and bad. I was good that the tenants were used to this because there was a slumlord that was in charge of it. They're used to their water having to be shut off for, hours, day, whatever at the time while they get it fixed. So I come back the next day and I get the stuff I need and everything. And I've started digging down. This is just me. I don't have a helper at this point. I get a little roto hammer. I forget what it is, but it wasn't like a full on jackhammer, cause I have to hold it and angle it.
Yeah, the little handheld one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I spend some time on that. I finally, after hours, I get it cleaned up enough. I go to cut it. And just like you said, it just broke off, you know, like just broke off. And so like now I have to dig even further back and dig out even more concrete.
Chasing the pipe. Yeah. It's the worst.
New pipe. I get those blue couplings, those compression couplings. I finally get it on there. And I believe like one side worked, but the other side leaked because it was too thin. And then meanwhile, tenants are, you know, wondering where the water is. And even though they're used to it, I personally hated the fact that these whole building didn't have water. You know, they couldn't flush their toilets. And people in this particular situation, it's not like they have any other place to go or any other means. They're just stuck there. And it's nothing that angers me more than like a slumlord who won't do the bare minimums, like provide clean water, sewage, take shortcuts, just living in like houses that have flood and they have mold and they have water damage and they just won't get it fixed. It really angers me. But anyway, I ended up calling for backup and then some people came in and helped, and it ended up taking 2 days. Those people were out without water until we finally got it cut on. And, I was like praying the whole time when I pressured it up that it wasn't going to leak, and it didn't leak. Mm-hmm. And so we hurried up and backfilled, ended up quoting them to replace everything. They were like, give us a quote. We've been meaning to do, you know, just replace all the plumbing, and which that would have been a crazy job, like 40 units, but, they didn't do it.
I'm sure they didn't.
It was just that so pressure.
What pipe did you put back in there?
I think I used PVC. Yeah, PVC with the blue compression fittings. Was able to get it there, but it was just, you're in the dirt, you're underneath the wall, so you have to jackhammer, but not break the pipe between the wall and the concrete.
Yeah.
And those are the worst. And I ended up getting paid all right for it. But it was just stressful. It was really stressful.
Oh yeah. Like that's a perfect example of like, you're never going to learn how to address that in a plumbing. Like, that's a perfect example of it.
But, all right, Mac. Well, I think that's pretty good. You are still doing the videos, right? It's just
still doing the videos.
And what was that address if people want to check you out again?
It's plum_AZ on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram.
Awesome, awesome. And then for me, I'm Brandon at That Plumbing Podcast. This is going to be our first episode that has video as well, so it'll be on YouTube. Now, if you made it this far, what I'd like to do is just kind of get some engagement going, and I wanted to get people's opinion on, ready for it, solder versus press, and what are the pros and cons of both. Mac, why don't you start off and tell us which one you prefer and why?
That is a tough question. It really, not to complicate the question, but it depends on the application. I only solder for the most part. Our company has a pro press. I don't have a personal one. So if it's a quoted job or something like that, where it's going to help a lot to pro press, I'll pro press it all day. And it's way faster and more efficient. The downside of it is the parts are more expensive, especially when you get up into the inch and a half, 2 inch stuff. It's like 30, 40 bucks for a 90. The thing I like about soldering is if you need to pull a 90 off and reuse that pipe, you can do that with solder. You can, you know, heat it up, pull it off, clean up the solder and reuse it. Where with ProPress, it crimps that pipe. So you can't really reuse it. You have to cut it off. So I am in the opinion of soldering most of my stuff. The parts are cheaper. You can manipulate it a lot more in terms of, like I was saying, pulling pieces off, reusing stuff. Cause if, for example, if you're redoing a main water service at a house and you ProPress a coupling up against the house, if that coupling ever goes bad, you're busting into the wall of the house to cut off on a straight round piece of pipe to make a repair. Whereas with solder, you know, you can heat that coupling up, pull it off, sweat a new one on. So it's close. In a perfect world, I'd want to pro press everything, but it's not a perfect world. So I'm going to say solder.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on the same camp with you. It does depend on the application. My company did, they have a pro press on the van. I didn't have to pay for it, which if I had to pay for it myself, I'd probably never use it because I'm not dropping 2.5 G's on that. But definitely if it's close to a wall, like if I'm doing a water heater, I'm not going to press a ball valve coming out of the wall because it might be me going back there next time. And I just
cut into the wall.
Or manifolds. I seen a picture on Facebook about they did an entire manifold and press. And it was like, this might've been like a commercial. I was trying to find the picture, but if there was a leak at any point, that entire thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's the biggest downfall, in my opinion. Any leak, if the fittings are too close, I don't know what the, specifics are on how close you can solder to it, but I know it's not pretty, it's not very close because it'll ruin that O-ring. Boy. But one thing I will say about ProPress though is for gas lines, I love it. It's great for like black iron in a wall rather than having to thread it or use any push fittings. You can press it on. So I'd say probably 90% of the gas jobs I do, if it's in a house or like in a wall or something, I'll rent the jaws for the gas, pay a little bit more for the Viega press fittings, and I'll press the gas ones.
Gotcha. So. Yeah, I've never, I've never had to use it for gas. Where I'm at, we have like a side that does a project side that handles a lot of the gas lines, but yeah. That would be great to not have to cut and thread, especially in the wall, just ever.
Yeah.
To avoid it. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, I tell you what, if you're listening to this on Spotify or Apple, go over to the YouTube channel and check this video out and leave a comment about what do you think, press versus solder, yay or nay? Is it bad for the industry? Is it good for the industry? Whatever you think. And we're going to try to keep doing these on video as well, and build up a following on YouTube, and some other content that I talked about in the past. So, but Mac, thank you. Awesome. For coming back on. It's always good to have you.
No, absolutely. I love coming on here and I appreciate you inviting me back.
Yeah, no problem. Well, I'm sure I'll see you again. And, until next time, everyone have a good day.